Welcome to Season 6, Episode 1 of As You Go, a podcast meant to encourage and disciple women who are daily trying to follow Jesus while balancing all of the things in their lives like work, family, friendships, mental and physical health, and so much more. I'm Miranda Cox, and I serve as the Rolling Hills Women's Pastor, and I am hosting alongside Kathy Kuhn, our Counseling Pastor. Hey, Kathy, how are you?
Hello, hello, Miranda. I'm so excited to be back at Season 6.
I know. Here we are. I can't wait. So we are starting off this new season with a very special guest, Sissy Goff. Sissy is the Executive Director of Daystar Counseling Ministries in Nashville, a sought-after speaker for parenting events across the country, a best-selling author of 13 books, including her latest, The Worry-Free Parent, Finding the Confidence You Need So Your Kids Can Too, and she is the co-host of the Raising Boys and Girls podcast. Sissy, what a gift it is to have you joining us today. So could you just start off? I know that was a lot and you've done so many great things, but we want to know about you as a person. So can you just start off by sharing a bit about who you are, your family, interests, anything you'd like us to know?
Sure, absolutely. I am delighted to get to be with you all. As we were talking before we started, I just have been so grateful for your church for a lot of years. And so it's fun to get to link arms with you all in any capacity. And this one is especially a treat. As you said, I've been counseling kids and families for 30 years, which makes me feel so old. I wish I started when I was 5, but I didn't. And I love the work that I get to do. And then the offshoots of Raising Boys and Girls, like you said, the podcast and writing and things like that. And you know, anytime you get to have a job where you work with kids and take your dog to work, it's really a win-win.
And that is so, a win. Yes.
I know. So I have a little Havanese puppy that I'm hoping is going to be good and quiet during our conversation. But as I was plugging myself in to get ready to talk to you all, I noticed about 3 cords that were almost chewed in half from, I think, the last time I did a podcast. So no telling, she has disappeared currently, which is always trouble, but I won't get up and follow her.
We'll see. If you just disappear suddenly, we'll know.
We'll know where.
You'll know she's eating something in another room. Yeah. And I am the aunt of 2 little fellas that I get to hang out with a lot named Henry and Witt that are 5 and 2 years old and just the light of my life these days. They are my sister and her husband's little guys, and they live about 3 blocks from me, which is awesome. And my sister has a clothing store in Nashville called Kay McCarthy and is my best friend and followed me to Nashville probably, I should know how long she's lived here, 15 years ago, maybe. At this point, I don't know. Anyway, wow. So I'm from Little Rock, Arkansas, and yeah, just delighted to get to have conversations like this. And I love the roles that you each play in the church and that you all are investing in women the way that you are. I love that y'all even have a counseling pastor. Yes. I think that is amazing. Yes. And a rarity on church staffs. And so just grateful to get to have the time with you all.
Okay. And there is something that I'm sure you get asked a lot. And I always hear people ask me whenever your name comes up, are you related to Bob Goff?
Yes, I do get asked that a lot. And the funny question is, yes, but a different Bob Goff. Okay. My dad's name is Bob Goff and my grandfather was Bob Goff.
No. Isn't that way. Funny?
Yes, but different fellas. But it took forever. I finally met Bob, was on his podcast this fall and was so excited to get to connect with him. And so we've decided we really are long lost relatives.
Okay. But that's amazing.
That works.
Yes.
We had to clear that up. So Sissy, can you just tell us a little bit about your faith journey and how did you know that being a therapist, speaker, author was what God was calling you to do?
Yes, I would love to talk about both of those things. My faith journey started at a summer camp when I was 12 years old, and we did not talk a lot about faith as a family. And so it was pretty foreign to me when I went to this summer camp that I don't think my parents quite realized was charismatic. I think they weren't sure about it when they came to pick me up, but it, you know, changed everything in terms of me and who I am and the trajectory of my life. Mm-hmm. And so faith really has continued to be very important to me throughout my growing up, and my adult life has been foundational to me. Again, it was not something my parents were really pursuing at the time. And so I was kind of forging my own path in terms of that. So I really grew up so grateful for a lot of phenomenal authors and Christian singers who mm-hmm. I think were a lot of my mentors and didn't even know it. And I had a group of friends who all of our faith collectively was really important to us. And so we were, I mean, I feel like God just was so gracious to me in bringing them into my life. And we prayed together and regularly, and we're trying to make, you know, as good a decisions as you can make as a high school kid together and mm-hmm. pursuing the Lord. I laugh a lot about how, you know, when you are an adolescent, your brain, the connections just aren't there yet. And so I have a distinct memory of skipping school and going to the nearest Christian bookstore and sitting in my car, listening to Twyla Paris with a friend crying, but not connecting the fact that we were skipping school and going to the Christian bookstore.
Like, so but for Jesus.
Right.
Skipping so school any for of you Jesus. Who are,
yes. Any of you who are worried about your adolescents thinking, why are they not making good connections in their brain? It's because they're really just not there yet. And it has nothing to do with who they're becoming. So anyway, and then I'm a lot older probably than both of you. And when I was growing up in the 70s and 80s, no one was talking about counseling. There were not counselors that you had ever heard of. I mean, it just, we were not exposed to it. The only place I was exposed to anything like therapy, this is hilarious, was Days of Our Lives, the soap opera that I watched after school.
Oh, yeah.
There was a psychologist named Marlena.
Yes.
That
yes.
I think maybe still on. I don't know how she's still going, still counseling. She hadn't gotten as burned out as I have over the years or aged like I have, but I just loved what they depicted her doing and felt like, well, I want to help people, but I don't know in what capacity. And maybe there's something called a child psychologist and maybe I could do something like that. And my family, the Bob Goffs, were both in the hotel hospitality industry and were trying to convince me to follow in their footsteps. And I kept thinking, I don't think that's really helping people the way I want to. So, you know, as God does, it was really a step at a time. And I went from undergraduate to graduate school. My sister, I was an only child till the age of 16 when my sister was born. And evidently my first response to my parents was, I didn't know y'all did that anymore.
That's fair.
When they told me they were pregnant. And
that's
so
fair.
Yeah. So I didn't want to go far from home because she was two. And so I went to the University of Arkansas, which was a fabulous school. And mm-hmm. I loved it, had a ball and studied psychology and then knew I needed to get a master's degree because there wasn't a lot you could do with an undergrad in psychology. And so again, so funny how God works things. I applied to three graduate schools, Auburn, Wheaton, and Vanderbilt. And I only got into Vanderbilt, which to me says God wanted me in Nashville.
Amen.
And wanted me at Daystar. And so moved to Nashville straight out of college, started Vandy for grad school and knew that I loved this work, knew that I loved my classes, but I had a big young life background and knew I wanted to do something with kids that was super relational, but still really asking the harder questions and coming alongside them in a therapeutic way. And honestly, I interviewed with Melissa Trevathan, who founded Daystar, and sat in my interview so teary, feeling like, oh my goodness, this is what I feel like in my bones I've been called to do my whole life. And I didn't know it really existed in this way. And so that was 1993. And here I am, all these years later, still doing the same thing with a lot more branches of it than there used to be. But
yeah, praise the Lord. And I feel like we've had multiple guests on and they've said the thing that I felt like the Lord was calling me to do, I didn't know how it was going to be possible or that it was even a thing to do, you know, but just those steps of obedience over and over and over again, preparing us for whatever it is that he has for us. It's just incredible to, and I think hopeful for people that are like, okay, I feel called to do this, but I don't even know what that's going to look like, you know, or how that's going to happen.
Right. And the Lord will just use anything, even Days of Our Lives.
Right. I'm like skipping school and Days of Our Lives and look at what he can do out of that. Right. That's incredible. Okay, Sissy, we want to hear a little bit more about you before we step into our topic today about soul care. But what would you say is for you right now in this season, what would you say is the biggest challenge and the thing that you are celebrating?
Those are great questions. Challenge, I think, would continue to be balance for me. And you know, one of my favorite verses is Psalm 144:12. I think it's the ESV that says, "May our sons in their youth be like plants full grown, our daughters like corner pillars cut for the structure of a palace." Mm-hmm. And I love that when I think about girls and women. And I was talking about it with a friend who said, I was saying, I love that corner pillars are so strong and they're so beautiful. And she said, and they hold up so much. And I think as women, we hold up so much, often that people aren't even aware of. And it's in different capacities, in different spaces. I'm not a mom. So it's, I mean, I hope I'm holding up, helping hold up my sister and her family, her kiddos, but a lot of other families as well. But for the moms that are listening, you are holding so much in your own household. And just all of us in the different roles in our lives, there's a lot that we're carrying. And I think that that is a gift, and it can flip into a curse when we're not in a place of balance. And so thinking always about what does that look like for me with the different hats I wear feels like a challenge. And I feel like I'm moving towards healthier what it looks like. I think in the last, maybe since COVID, I'm moving towards healthier what it looks like, but it's still certainly a journey. And I still get way too worn out and mean when I do and have to put myself in time out and do the things I know I need to do, spend time with the Lord and all the things to bring myself back to myself and who I want to be. But that would probably be my biggest challenge. And then celebration is the next one you said. I think really I have felt like it has been these two little guys that I get to help raise or feel like the most celebration in my life right now. And I would add this puppy currently, I think, because she's been good for the last 30 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
but y'all know, two little boys and a puppy feels like three puppies. So we're just having a lot of fun. I taped on my phone and posted a video of my puppy following around my two-year-old nephew by the diaper. She had his diaper in her teeth and they were just running around together. And I thought, that's what it is. They're just all litter mates right now, which is just a blast and exhausting at times. So anyway, well, but that definitely is what I'm celebrating.
Thank you for sharing those. Do you feel like, I don't know, maybe this is just me personally, but when I struggle to stay balanced, which is really hard for me, I feel like my fix is usually like swing to the extreme one way or swing back the other way. And so I have trouble finding that balance in the middle between the two, you know? I'm like, my fix to being extreme, whatever it is, maybe it's work or ministry, then my fix is like, let me go all in family, you know? And then I gotta swing back the other way and back and forth. I'm like, it's so hard.
Yes, it's so hard.
It's just
so
trying hard to juggle it all.
Yeah, just trying to juggle it all. Yeah. Thank you for the Lord's strength and perseverance, that's for sure. And grace, right?
Yes.
And grace. Yes. Well, our staff focus over the past few months has been on soul care. And so it's always a focus of ours, but we've just really been pressing into that, like soul care in our lives, finding rest in the Lord, trying to balance something or multiple things. Yes. And for us, it's been ministry with our family and with our rest and care of our souls. And so we want to extend that focus out to our listeners and just talk about the importance of that. When you think about soul care, how would you define it? Doesn't have to be, you know, the perfectly articulated or anything like that. But when you think about soul care, what does that look like for you or sound like for you?
Well, I mean, I think that idea that we give out of an overflow of what we're receiving and soul care to me would be, what are we receiving? And in a lot of different capacities, I mean, spiritually being first and foremost, but emotionally and exercise and eating right and doing a lot of fun things. I mean, I think sometimes as believers, that's part of what we can really let be last on our list. And so to have books that you're reading just for fun and have shows that are silly that you watch that aren't, you know, feeding you in any really rich way other than you're laughing, which is about as rich as it can get in a lot of ways. And just, I think for all of us, it looks different, but I love that y'all are focusing on it because I think one of the things that I talk about, I have a new book called The Worry-Free Parent and I'm doing seminars on it regularly. And one of the things I talk about is how kids are so in tune with their bodies And with, you know, any child I'm counseling, if I say to them, tell me where you first feel worry and anxiety in your body. And they will say, my tummy starts to hurt, or my face gets hot. Or I had one girl say, I feel it first in my bow. I don't know what she meant by that, but they know. And I think as adults, we're moving so fast. We're trying to do so many things often that we get really out of touch with our bodies. We get really out of touch with what we need in all the different places. And so I think there's really not a lot that's more important than being aware of the signs of when we start to get depleted in terms of soul care and what really does fill us back up. Because again, I don't think we're our best selves. And I don't, at least for me, God can't use me in the same way when I'm depleted. I'm just, like I said, I'm not very kind and I want to be.
Same. The director of the refuge, she was speaking to our staff and she said that she knows that she is not in the best place of caring for her soul when she walks fast and talks fast. And I was like, that's me. Like I walk faster and I talk faster and I'm less intentional with people and seeing them when I'm depleted,
Just trying to get things done.
Yeah, just trying to get it done. Just trying to knock it off the list, you know?
Yeah. Well, what I always say about myself is I get twitchy and...
Yeah. Yes.
You know, like I just start...
I think that's the same.
Yeah, it's exactly. That's what I was thinking. And on the flip side of that, I read something, and I wish I remember who said it on Instagram last week, who said, I know I'm in a good place when I notice the colors in a flower.
Oh, I love that.
Isn't that great? I love that. When we slow down, we're seeing creation. We're taking the time to notice.
So we've had a lot of staff ask, okay, what's the difference between soul care and self-care? And so I started down this path of like researching those two terms. And what I found is it's really not about the term in and of itself, because I think that there are some things about soul care that are the same as self-care. And so we have to be careful by saying one is good, one is bad, you know. But what I did find is when we look at social media, we look at the things that are being promoted by this, do this, be a part of this. It's all self-care. You deserve to be happy. You deserve, like, I think that's where we have to be careful and think about those things as like, are these things really soul care? Are they something that the Lord can use to refresh, recharge, you know, and that I'm drawn to him in some way? Is it a godly thing? Is it a godly habit or something that I'm creating? Any thoughts on those two terms?
Well, I love that you said that, because I do think that self-care is probably encompassed in soul care, but soul care goes much deeper, like you're saying. And I think self-care can exist, I guess, without any kind of faith-based practice, or people are practicing self-care without going to those places inside of themselves. And, you know, there's so much in the important conversation we're having around mental health, which I'm so thrilled we have moved in that direction as a culture. And I think there's some danger in that it can, from a secular standpoint, become really self-absorbed because it's so much about what I need, boundaries that I have to have in my life, which again, as a therapist, obviously I believe boundaries are crucial. But I think we can really stop short of love and loving people in our lives who are hard when it becomes all about self-care. So I love the distinction of, I mean, I do think eating right and exercise and, like I said, watching shows that doesn't feel godly, but I love even that in the therapy world, there's godly play, you know, that's a phrase, because I think those things are involved in soul care. But I think the end all be all is not how do I protect myself and how do I don't know. I don't even know what the end all be all to self care. I don't even know how I would describe that, but I do think there's something bigger in how do I honor who God has made me to be and the body he's given me, and how do I love others out of that?
It doesn't just stop.
That's really good.
And that's kind of where we landed, asking yourself, like, if I'm going to do self care, soul care, asking myself, like, why am I choosing to do the things that I'm doing? And hopefully the fruit of it is that I am more connected to the Lord. it, you know, we look at come to me, all who are weary, and I will give you rest. And so our job is to come to him, to go to him. He's already there. But so out of that, I am more fully worshiping the Lord and able to love and serve others well by doing the things that I'm doing. And I think that has to do with our body, by finding rest, eating, exercise, all because God has given us this body to use for the kingdom. And so if I'm taking care of it in a way that I am, you know, using it in obedience and glorifying him in it, then it's a good thing.
Right.
You know?
Yes. I love that.
Sissy, you know, it really seems over the past few years, there's been such a rise in anxiety. Do you see that as the case? And what do you think are the contributing factors to that?
Yes, I definitely see it as the case. David and Melissa, who are two of my dear friends and coworkers, the three of us wrote a book called Are My Kids on Track that I wish I knew the year it came out. Maybe 2017? I don't know. Before the pandemic, but several years before the pandemic. And in it, we quoted the rates of anxiety among kids, and it was 1 in 8 kids were dealing with anxiety at the time. And out of that book, my editor reached out to me. I talked about how the average age of onset was 8 and we were seeing it drop to 6 or 7. And he said, hey, I hadn't realized this. Would you ever be willing to write a book for elementary age kids, the kids that are right in that window, girls, because girls are twice as likely as boys to deal with it. They're leading the statistics. And as any therapist probably would say, I said, sure, if I can also write one for their parents, because it's a whole family system situation. And so anyway, I wrote Braver, Stronger, Smarter for Elementary Age Girls and Raising Worry-Free Girls that came out in September of 2019. Little did I know here the pandemic would hit. And at that point, the statistics had jumped to 1 in 4 kids rather than 1 in 8. And again, with girls twice as likely. And so it just keeps rising. Now we're 1 in 3 adolescents, which next book I wrote was for adolescents about anxiety because I was most worried about them. And now we're at 1 in 3 adults with women twice as likely as men. So it is certainly rampant in our culture today. And y'all, I just read a study about the states that are the most stressed in our country. Guess which state's number one?
Tennessee.
Oh, yep. No.
Wow.
Yes. Tennessee, we're leading the statistics.
That heartbreaking. Is, absolutely heartbreaking.
It really is. It really is. And so because most of our listeners are women, I know this is kind of a deep question, but as best you can, how can we as women fight some of those things that contribute to anxiety? What are some of the top things we can do?
Well, so in each of the anxiety books, I break it down to understanding, help, and hope, because I think all three are equally as important. And with the understanding piece of it, which the worry-free parent, I think any adult could read, not just parents, because it's, I mean, I joke and say all those anxiety books are like this first 6 weeks of counseling in our offices, because it really is what we do. And I think the first thing we can do is start to recognize when it impacts us, because often we don't know that it's anxiety. And and in the book, I talk about the 5 ways I think anxiety impacts us the most as adults. We'll see if I can remember them. 1 is anxiety makes us attach future meaning to present problems. So just because this is happening now means it's always going to happen, or I'm never going to, or my kids are never going to. We can go to those places really fast. 2, anxiety distracts us, because anxiety really takes place. We're thinking about the past and we're thinking about the future. We're not in the present moment, which takes us back to that flower idea. If I'm anxious, I'm not noticing the colors in the flower. So anxiety distracts us. Anxiety takes away our warmth and our joy. I read a really interesting article researching the books that talked about how anxiety in kids is often linked to a lack of parental warmth. And it's not that parents aren't warm people. It's just when we're anxious, we can't access the warmth that is so true of who we are and who we want to be. Anxiety makes us angry, which, y'all, I mean, I would say in the last 2 years, I've never sat with as many parents who feel discouraged, defeated, feel as much like failures, and are talking about losing it with their kids as I have, I mean, recently. And I would say, if anybody's listening, and you're a parent or you're not a parent. Because I think as I talk about being angry and how it impacts me when I'm not in a good place, usually underneath that is some anxiety that I haven't really been aware of. I haven't talked about. And I think the same is true for parents. I mean, the parent who is screaming at their kids, trying to get out of the door on the way to school because your son forgot his soccer cleats and your daughter forgot her homework, all the things. Really, I will say to parents, often it's because you know if he gets another tardy, then he gets Saturday school. Saturday school means he can't go to the birthday party. And he really wants so much to connect with other kids. And so you've already gone five steps down the road. You're wanting to be the best parent you can be. You want really good things for him. It's not happening. And so it's easy to get angry out of that. Mm-hmm. But I think the way we talk to ourselves eventually spills over onto the people we love. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's so important. Really, the best thing I think parents can do for their kids is to do their own work. And the fifth thing I would say is that anxiety makes us micromanage. And when we can't control the big things in our circumstances, we go towards the little things to try and lock down and control that aren't helpful. And the people around us end up feeling like we don't think they're capable. We don't believe in them. Even we don't see the good in them. And so, so doing our own work, I think, is really, really important when it comes to anxiety. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's the why instead of the how, but I think the why is a really important place to start.
That's great. I think that's great. And I think many times we see, or hear women say, I don't have time because I have all these relationships, or I don't have time because I have to take care of the kids, but really it's just based off of what you're saying, we will be a better parent. We will be a better aunt. We will be a better coworker. We will be a better neighbor when we take the time to care for our souls. If not, we're trying to pull out of something that's empty.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
What are some practical soul care habits that you have put in place or that you would even love to put in place?
Well, I mean, the first really for me is always recognizing when I'm not in a good place. Mm-hmm. And I think we talked about before noticing it in my body. So how does it start to impact my body? I mean, I really, for one, my shoulders get real sore because I keep my shoulders up around my neck when I'm tense. Mm-hmm. And so being aware of that and being aware of where my thoughts go, because anxiety takes place so much in our bodies and our thoughts. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I get in these patterns of thought. And one of my first thoughts is I'm trying harder than everyone else, mm-hmm. or I'm giving more than all the people around me. And anytime, I mean, thankfully, over the years, I've started to realize that is like a warning light on my car that means I'm not in a good place. And so anytime I get to that spot, I think, okay, I need to pull back. I need to go for a walk with some worship music. I need to go spend some time in the Word, get out a prayer journal. I need to do some things to center myself again because I am not in a good space. Mm-hmm. And those would probably be really music. Cece Winans is one of my favorites right now.
So good.
She's always one of my favorites, not just right now, but having some music that becomes my go-to when I'm out of sync in that way is really important for me. Getting in the Word, reading other books that are faith-based, that fill me up, I have certain authors that are kind of my go-to that even their writing gives to me in this really rich way. Those are things that I do. And I'm an introvert in a very extroverted job and career. I didn't used to be an introvert. I used to be an extrovert, but I think my job and career have shifted me. And I think it's moved me so much that direction. And so I really do. I mean, even if I go do something with amazing life-giving friends, when I come home, I usually need to sit for 30 minutes and watch a show. So TV is soul care for me because I think it is pulling me out of the world of all the things I'm carrying. If we go back to being pillars, I get to think about somebody else's life for 30 minutes, laugh, be distracted. And I think I go to bed in a different space because I've been pulled out of the things that I'm carrying that can tend to weigh me down and pulled into a different place. And then gratitude, I would say gratitude is probably one of the biggest too in my life, bouncing all over the place. But
no, that's great. That's great. So as a counselor, too, are those helpful for you to not carry the weight of everything that you're taking in as you're sitting across from people? This is a lot.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And I, over the years, which I think is a good practice for any of us in life, I have had to go back to regularly, God loves whoever I'm sitting with more than I do. And he knows what they need. Mm-hmm. He is with them. I mean, I just have to go back to that mantra regularly as I'm doing this work. Because if not, if I don't believe he's carrying it, I'll start to try.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
I love that. So, Sissy, you probably have no idea, but there is a resource that you wrote that is trying not to get emotional.
You're good. You're good.
Deeply personal to me. I have a 16-year-old daughter that has struggled the last couple of years with anxiety. And so if I can get it together here, I'd like to read this post that I put on social media back in May. And little did I know that I'd be having the opportunity to thank you in person, but I just want to read this, and this is with her permission. It says, "Can I be transparent for a minute? I have three teenagers, for a few more days at least, until my oldest turns 20 on Friday. Parenting is such a joy, but it also comes with challenges. Each one of my children are so unique, and I can see how God made them so specially. It can be really hard if you have a child that struggles with worry or anxiety. I purchased this book, Brave, A Teen Girl's Guide to Battling Worry and Anxiety by Sissy Goff with Daystar Counseling, about a year ago for my sweet daughter. It sat in her drawer untouched for a long time, but in God's perfect timing, she picked it up and is in the process of reading it. There are notes written all over it, and she has been reading Psalms 4:8. I love this book because it points her to Jesus. This book has also helped my daughter to understand the biology of what's happening in her body when she is worried, helps her to understand her temperament and how it is a gift from God. And Sissy writes in such a way that my daughter feels known and seen. Moms, if you have a child that struggles with worry or anxiety, I'm praying especially for you tonight. Just as our kids need to know they are not alone, you need to know you are not alone either. Keep pointing them to Jesus. Keep having the discussions. Keep praying. God has a plan and a purpose for them, and he is writing their story. Don't lose heart."
Oh, thank you so much.
So I just wanted to thank you so much, and that, you know, your resources really are so powerful and helpful. And so thank you for what you've done, you know, just with my family. But there are so many great resources out there, that being one of
that
them.
That means the world to me. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Tell her I'm proud of her.
I will. She's been doing great.
Good.
Do you have any resources that you would recommend? I know you've mentioned several of them along the way, but just any resources that would help our listeners who are struggling with anxiety or worry, or have kids that are struggling, anything we haven't mentioned?
Yeah. So I think I said all the anxiety books? The Worry-Free Parent for any grown-up who's mm-hmm. dealing with it, whether you're a parent or not. Raising Worry-Free Girls, if you're mm-hmm. the parent of a girl who's struggling with worry or anxiety. And then for them, elementary age kids, Braver, Stronger, Smarter, and then Brave for middle and high school. And then if you have a son, I would highly recommend David Thomas's book, Raising Emotionally Strong Boys. Mm-hmm. It is fantastic. And then he has a workbook for, I think his is really elementary and middle school age guys, called Strong and Smart. And so those are probably my That's favorite great. Resources for all of those.
And I love how you've mentioned several times too, that really, regardless of whether you have a child, or, you know, if you're a listener who doesn't have your own kids, but you have nieces and nephews or mm-hmm. grandchildren, these are all helpful resources.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. Well, Sissy, we like to ask our guests this one last question at the end every time. If you were to use one word to describe this season of your life, what word would you choose?
Oh, y'all, that's a great question. The first word that came to my mind, which feels scary to say out loud, I think, it's joy. But goodness, I still would say that, and I still very much feel the effects of John 16:33 of in this world we'll have trouble. Mm-hmm. But I have a lot of really rich glimpses of joy. Like I said, the boys and the puppy, and I'm really grateful for my work in this season, and a lot of really rich friendships. And yeah, so I think I would say that.
I love that. I love that. That's a good word. Well, Sissy, you are a gift. I know Miranda shared, but there are so many of our listeners, so many of our Rolling Hills attendees that you have ministered to that you don't even know, using your resources. And so thank you for the way that you love and continue to grow and then continue to share that with other people so that they can find hope and healing, right, for themselves or for their children. And thank you for sitting with us today.
Yes.
What a treasure. And
so fun for me.
So great. So great.
Yes, thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, ladies, thank you for listening to As You Go. If you are interested in learning more about Rolling Hills, download our Rolling Hills app, follow us on social media, or visit our website at rollinghills.church. As You Go podcast is a part of the Rolling Hills Podcast Network, available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Thanks so much for tuning in.